When Goodfellas first hit the theaters in 1990, a classic was born. Few could anticipate the unparalleled influence it would have on pop culture, one that would inspire future generations of filmmakers and refine the gangster picture as we know it today. In his new book, Made Men, The Story of Goodfellas, film critic Glenn Kenny chronicles its making and afterlife of the film that introduced America to the real modern gangster. Brutal, ruthless, yet darkly appealing. Again, the name of the book is Made Men, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Glenn Kenny to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. A pleasure.
Well, thanks for the invite. I'm really pleased you liked the book and that you wanted to talk about it.
Well, the book is fascinating, and I learned a lot about it. First of all, it's just hard to believe it's been 30 years since the film came out.
Oh, tell me about it. My gosh. In some respects, for me, it does feel like 30 years because when I first met Martin Scorsese in 1989, when he was editing the movie and he was telling me about the movie, I was in my, I was in my late 20s, but I was just sort of at the beginning of my career in journalism, so to speak. I'd gotten into this magazine freelance writing business in the early 80s and built it up from there. And I was working in a magazine called Video Review, and that was my first real job, so to speak, in publishing, which, you know, sounds like an ancient condition nowadays. Both Scorsese and I were substantially younger men, but you know, it does feel to me like it's been a while. That said, to me, the movie remains extremely fresh and vital and as funny and harrowing and thought-provoking as it did then, because it's such a beautifully made piece of work. And I remember talking to Joseph Reedy, the first assistant director on the movie, for this book, and asking him, you know, do you know how special this was? And he said, I didn't know exactly how special it was, but it did feel in the process that we were doing something that was, you know, the project he'd worked with Scorsese on prior to that were all good films, but he said this was something different. This was something that had a certain lightning in a bottle feeling to it.
So you mentioned being in that room with Scorsese in the late in 1989, before the film comes out in 1990. So obviously you were covering it then. All these years later, at what point did you say, okay, I would like to really look in and see and take a look at this film and its impact on culture and society?
Well, Scorsese is one of those directors who whose work, you know, it pays off, really pays off in terms of a film education to give his movies close scrutiny. And aside from being a critic, I'm also a professor at New York University, where I teach a course called Language of Film. And of course, New York University is where Scorsese himself sort of got his start studying film and making short films. And I had occasion on several occasions teaching my class to demonstrate to my class the way Scorsese uses sound, the way Scorsese uses music, the way Scorsese has a very particular approach to directing, where he wants the viewer to see as he sees. And that includes, you know, your head moving from right to left, the way your mind processes things that you find attractive. So, you know, I've been thinking a lot about the way he makes movies, and also how this relates to Goodfellas, because in a way Goodfellas is to Scorsese what North by Northwest was to Hitchcock, you know, a kind of a summation and a grand virtuoso celebration of all the things he does as a director. So, you know, when talking about writing books, expanding my own writing projects to be larger than, you know, film reviews, which I do for the New York Times and RogerEbert.com, and essays, when you talk about a book, it seems that there's quite a bit there. And, it was something I kicked around with editors and with my agent for a period of time until my friend Peter Joseph at Hanover Square Press said, well, yeah, we'd like to do this. And yeah, we'd like to do it to coincide with the 30th anniversary of the film's release, which really is enough hindsight, I think, to really place it in the larger scheme of popular culture. So it was one of those things that came together pretty serendipitously.
So let's talk about the film itself and its making. And I guess it's impossible to talk about that and not talk about what you've already touched on, which is the legacy of Martin Scorsese.
Yeah, well, it was one of those things where Scorsese was drawn into it, not quite against his will, but he had made films about Italian Americans, a documentary about his parents, certainly Mean Streets, a kind of an autobiographical picture that was his breakout feature, Raging Bull, about a boxer whose own story, certainly touches on Italian American organized crime, and in Mean Streets there's a character, whose uncle is a mobster and for whom he's a very reluctant bagman. So he felt, well, I've made gangster films before. I don't want to make another gangster film. But then he read Nicholas Pileggi's Wise Guy, and he said, well, this is something I feel I have a personal connection to, not because he was, a criminal or interested in being a criminal, but because his own background in Little Italy in New York in the 50s and 60s, it was a neighborhood that was looked over by guys who were operatives in big crime families. So in a sense, he's at the beginning of the film, after the harrowing opening scene of the killing for the second time of Billy Batts in the trunk of that car, that goes all the way back to Henry Hill, the real life mobster that Pileggi wrote about, looking out his window. And that guy is not just Henry Hill, but it's also Scorsese, because he was a child in Little Italy, couldn't go outside much because he had asthma. That's how he got to watch so many movies on TV. And he would look outside and he'd see this world that he wasn't participating in. And part of that world was the gangster world. And he thought, well, this account that Pileggi has written from the point of view of Henry Hill, a foot soldier in the mafia, not a big shot like Don Corleone in The Godfather or anything like that, but just a sort of a portion of the blue-collar mafia, who was also a little bit of an outsider because he was only partially Italian and therefore couldn't become a made man, couldn't get the protection of the full Sicilian organization. This is something I can look at, and this is something I can do. And so he thought, well, this is an interesting project. And when he approached Pileggi, and it was funny because Pileggi, when he got the call from Scorsese himself, didn't believe it was Scorsese. He thought it was a colleague of his breaking his chops, so to speak. But when they finally talked, Pileggi was saying, this is something he'd always wanted to work with Scorsese. So they got on like a house on fire right away and immediately started writing a script on a handshake deal.
When it comes to Pileggi, and I know you did a new interview with him for the book, what was the reaction to the intervening years of that story, his attachment to it, and then seeing how the world responded to it?
Well, he still enjoys a very close and productive relationship with Scorsese to this day. They get along great, and he's working on a script for Scorsese now, in fact. And he's just delighted. One thing that I think is a net minus for the world, but not necessarily for him, is that the success of Goodfellas put him in Hollywood, where he does a lot of screenwriting and consulting, and he does great doing that. But I think it's robbed the world of more Pileggi books. He's only got three, and two of them are absolute classics, Wise Guy and then Casino, which Scorsese also adapted into a motion picture. And he loves it. He's not a person eager to be on camera himself, but he loves working with Scorsese. He loves the fact that people will come up to him and talk about Goodfellas, and they'll say, "Oh my gosh, that scene! How am I funny? That's unbelievable!" Because him and Scorsese co-wrote the script, and he finds that hilarious because he didn't write that scene. That scene's not even a piece of Henry Hill's life. That scene is a piece of Joe Pesci's life, but Pileggi is smart and resourceful enough to understand that that anecdote is very much a part and parcel of what that kind of life is like. He saw the truth in it when Pileggi brought it to the mix. he saw the truth in it, and he said, yeah, it's not what Henry Hill said happened, but it's something that definitely happens in Henry Hill's world, and let's do it. And he's tickled pink that he gets credit for this genius scene that is actually something that Pesci and Martin Scorsese kind of spun out from Pesci's own personal experiences as a nightclub singer in New Jersey in the 1950s.
So let's talk about Joe Pesci. I mean, here is a villainous character that we just can't get enough of and want to be attached to this guy for the full run of the film. So what is it about him and really the working relationship that he has with Scorsese that continued just to recently?
Well, you know, he's a very private guy. He does what he wants. He's not someone who is interested in the spotlight, so to speak. You know, there was a period after doing Raging Bull, for which he was nominated for an Oscar and very highly acclaimed, in which he did a lot of work. And it's, even though he's known for playing these boisterous, loudmouth characters, the work he did was across a pretty large range, including, of course, he's one of the wet bandits in the Home Alone movies.
Right.
You know, and he co-starred with Rodney Dangerfield in Easy Money. But he's also in smaller films like the academic drama With Honors or things like that. I'm Dancing as Fast as I Can, where he plays a patient in a mental institution. And then after a while, he just, My Cousin Vinny, things like that. And he just fell away and didn't want to do this anymore. Interestingly enough, he was never personally keen on being a performer in the first place. This is the strangest thing, because it's usually the opposite. His parents, his father, pushed him to become a singer, and Pesci didn't want to. But he said, I want you to become a singer because I want you to, I think you have talent, and I want you to do things that aren't associated with, crime or so on and so forth. So he trained to do that. He's actually an excellent singer. There's a very good record of him singing under the name Joe Dogs, playing with the renowned jazz organist and trumpet player Joey DeFrancesco, called Falling in Love Again. It's just a fabulous jazz ballad record. He sounds a little like little Jimmy Scott. And I think he's come to love that. But he doesn't like the spotlight. He doesn't like to do interviews. I tried very hard to get an interview with him, and he was one person I could just not crack because he doesn't do it. It's not just me, by the way. He did reluctantly agree to appear at the New York Film Festival after the Irishman screened there in the fall of 2019. He's up there with De Niro and Scorsese and Pacino and Emma Tillinger, the producer, and so many other people. And they're up there laughing and hooting it up and having a great time. And he's laughing, too. But at one point, the moderator, Kent Jones, says, Joe, would you like to you're in The Irishman after a long absence from the screen. Would you like to talk about how you came to be in the movie? And there was a pregnant pause, and Pesci sat there and he had this sort of Cheshire Cat grin on his face. And then he just said no. And that was it. So he showed up. He did his contractual duty. He showed up and he didn't talk. Just like De Niro says at the beginning of Goodfellas, this is you always keep your mouth shut. That's what Joe Pesci does now.
So let us just talk about The Irishman for a second and how Goodfellas led to it, because the last chapter of the book is from Goodfellas to The Irishman, and you're looking at the films that have intervened in that time for Scorsese from Goodfellas. But really, it's Goodfellas, Casino, and The Irishman. I mean, those are the gangster movies that Scorsese is known for.
Yeah, I mean, when he talked to Richard Schickel for the book's Conversations on Scorsese, he said it was Mean Streets, Goodfellas, and Casino, and that's the trilogy, and I'm not making any more. And then after, even though he had already made The Departed, which is a very intense crime movie, but The Departed didn't have the personal connection that any of those films did. So now you could almost say it's a quartet: Mean Streets, Goodfellas, Casino, and The Irishman. And The Irishman is most specifically connected to Goodfellas, I think, because it's almost an inversion. The character of Frank Sheeran, who's this very staid, traditional not a party guy, not an anarchist the way Henry Hill is, and certainly not a rat the way Henry Hill is. But, you know, whereas Henry Hill bemoans at the end of Goodfellas how he has to live the rest of his life like a schnook, now The Irishman is a portrait of a lion, such as it is, a lion in the late winter, all alone with nobody in his life, and realizing, despite the fact that he has no soul, that he's sold his soul and that he's wasted his life, and the emptiness that that realization gives way to. It's a very, it's a very tragic film in that respect, even though Sheeran is not exactly an entirely sympathetic figure, because he's just this kind of like remorseless killer who's the tool of these mob interests who, you know, eventually kills his best friend. So it's a dark film. It's a darker film in its way than Goodfellas ending is. And, you know, again, Scorsese is relating it to his own personal experience. He told Terry Gross, he says, you know, this environment of the nursing home where the film opens, this is where I spend a lot of my time now, in hospitals and waiting rooms. You know, he's not in one himself, but he knows this is where a lot of people in his life are. So that's the personal dimension. Very cheery.
Well, the name of the new book is Made Men, The Story of Goodfellas. It is published by Hanover Square Press. Glenn Kenny, I thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Joe, thank you so much. It's been wonderful.
Be well. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, Made Men, The Story of Goodfellas. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.